Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Dr. Carol Lieberman, thank you for joining me once again.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. So amid the swirl of the, you know, all of this speculation with regard to the Epstein case, what are your thoughts as far as this moving forward, and especially your comments? I was happy to see Pam Bondi as she talked about the hundreds of victims, and that they have to make sure that their names are redacted and they are protected. But what are your thoughts as this list, we're being told, is imminent?
Well, I think it's about time. You know, yeah. Epstein died some years ago already. And you know, there's all this hype. I mean, all this, oh, my God, who's on the list, you know? And so I think it's good that it's finally going to come out. I mean, I think the truth is important, period, regardless, you know, whether it's JFK, how he died, you know, all the details about that. I think it's best for us to know all these things. Now, of course, depending upon who is actually on the list, and who is on the client list. In other words, not just somebody who knew Epstein or even was had dinner with Epstein or things like that, but you know, people who where it could be proven in any case, or certainly it'll be implied by just being on the list that that they did some salacious things, you know, with women that, or underage women that Epstein provided. So I think it's going to have different effects depending upon who the people are. Now, the one thing that would be very unfortunate would be if there isn't if it isn't clear exactly, like if just the list is given out and it isn't clear what actually these people did with Epstein, you know, then it could have some unfortunate consequences for innocent people.
Yeah, this is so true. So as we wait for that, you know, we had a situation that we're learning more on, and that was here in Pennsylvania, and there will actually be a funeral tomorrow for a 30-year-old York County, Pennsylvania policeman who was shot and killed. He did have a protective vest on. It was in a hospital. It was a heart-wrenching situation where his mother actually, I interviewed her, and she wanted people to know about her son, that he was somebody who just wanted to help people. In this case, Dr. Carol, this was a case where somebody with a severe mental health history had been at the hospital, learned tragic news, had then come back and opened fire and taken, you know, nurses and doctors hostage and that sort of thing. The mentally health, the ill person, actually the shooter who shot the officer, was then shot by law enforcement. It's just an all the way around a tragedy here. But we're now learning about the mental health history of the individual. There's some wording that maybe the shooter in this case had some issues with gender. We're discerning that, although it's not fully confirmed. But, you know, we hear about this so often in the headlines, and in my news background, I see this and then people forget about it. And I just think there's a pattern here where we're not addressing the mental health issues, and then it's sort of supersized by this transgenderism issue that maybe is not being treated with regard to the mental health community because of the trans rights issue. There's this pattern that I see over and over. Just wanted to get your take because you are a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, and I know you've testified in many cases as well.
Well, you know, I've been doing a lot of research into this case. It's so tragic. It's so sad. Yes, the shooter, Diogenes Archangel, ironically Archangel, right?
Yeah.
Archangel Ortiz. He did have, you know, a lot of people were questioned about him, and he did have a mental illness background. He was depressed. I mean, a long history of depression and so on. And and he was arrested for domestic violence, and a lot of problems. But you know, one thing that I thought was particularly interesting was how one of the physician assistants who had been treating his wife, the patient in the hospital who then died, pointed out that this was an example of the crumbling medical system, that there wasn't enough money, there weren't enough doctors or other medical personnel. They were working under very difficult circumstances, and presumably Archangel thought that they, you know, it wasn't just that his wife died, it was that he thought that the hospital didn't do enough to keep her alive. So I think that's something that needs to be explored too. But yes, there is definitely a mental health crisis in this country. Transgenderism is certainly a part of it. The problem is that for kids, that they have been, it's really, they have been convinced by social media, by some teachers, by, peers, that this, that whatever their problems are, if they're depressed or if they're confused, that the answer is to just change themselves and to be the person of the opposite sex. And that is unfortunate, because really this is not true. Yes, there are some authentically transgender people who are just born that way. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to do with the hormones in the mother's body when she's pregnant, and it has to do with their upbringing when they're very young, their mm-hmm. relationship to each of the parents. So that's an authentic kind of transgenderism. There are many more people who have been sort of falsely put into this chain of hormones and surgeries and all that. And really then finding out later, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Yes. And so, you know, it reminds me of, and I'll just pivot to even the Luigi Mangione story, which we talked about before, yes. where he's somebody who even, and this is another strange thing, has this following, has raised a ton of money for his legal defense, and even to the point where he, through his attorneys, has requested that fans yes. stop sending him so much fan mail and pictures.
Yes.
I mean,
I read that.
Oh, my goodness.
I think this might be the first time that a male prisoner wanted women to stop sending them photos.
Right?
He must be getting a ton. He probably can't breathe in his cell.
It's bizarre.
The thing is, though, this case that we were just talking about with Archangel, with the physician's assistant talking about the medical system crumbling, and he also was talking about insurance not paying for enough things, which I think that's going to come out too, that as far as why the wife died, that it had something to do with perhaps her insurance wasn't paying for the treatment she needed or something like that. I don't know that for sure, but I'm just mm-hmm. but it made me think of Luigi Mangione. That this is another example of, he will probably be fired, but it was very brave of this physician's assistant to come out and talk about the problems of medical care. Mm-hmm. He used the word crumbling. And I was thinking about how some people who are going to know about the two stories are going to, think, Mangione was right mm-hmm. in complaining about the insurance and so on.
Yeah, and that the medical professional, the quote that was so sad was that the medical professional at UPMC here in Pennsylvania at the hospital was the person who had to break the news.
Yes.
And saw a broken, grief-stricken man and did not see this person as a monster.
Yes.
And so
yes,
then,
yes.
And so that's just, it feels like this was so many of these situations, it's avoidable even to have to deliver that. I don't know. What are we? And by the way, there are no medical detectors in that hospital. Obviously, they're going to, that's going to change. Mm. But, what do we do to break these kinds of patterns?
Well, yes, he was saying also that there should have been and this is true, that that there should have been, but it's not just this hospital, you know, there really isn't enough in many hospitals. There should have been someone who could have helped him with his grief, you know, after she died. But here's a man, Archangel was such a, it was a man who had a very sort of isolated life for the most part. He had a baby with one woman, mm-hmm. Some years ago, but she doesn't, and she's one of the ones who talked about his depression and so on, but she hasn't let him see the baby, you know, be in contact because of his mental health issues. So it just kind of shows that this wife, I'm presuming it's a wife, I've read that it was a wife, you know, there was the most media have been so, have been hiding, you know, they say a loved one, but, mm-hmm. but I read in at least one, story that it was his wife. In any case, this was someone who he obviously had finally found, a loving relationship with and was close to, whereas he had been leading a life of, you know, loneliness. And so she was particularly important to him. And so it's just really sad. We do need to be more on the lookout for people who are going through crises and to try to get them into treatment. You know, I haven't seen anything about his ever being in treatment, but, mm-hmm. Even if he went to treatment, he's someone who is likely to have fallen between the cracks. You know, you need to have some either on your own or someone pushing you to continue in treatment. You can't just go to a doctor once and even if you take some pills, you know, pills are not the answer. Therapy is the answer. So that brings me
to the next question, if I can put that in there. That,
sure.
And I know that you'll relate to this. I've had doctors tell me that kind of the scariest time is when they change the medication of a patient who's depressed or et cetera. Change the medication or put them on medication, because the medication, if you are depressed, can give you just enough oomph, for lack of a technical term,
yes.
to either harm oneself in a self-harm thing or
yes.
harm somebody else.
Yes, absolutely. Which is one of the biggest factors for why there is such a mental health crisis in the country, besides, you know, the difficulties in life, in the world and so on. But it's because psychiatrists have unfortunately become pill pushers because of insurance not paying them enough to be able to do therapy with patients. I mean, not all psychiatrists are like that. I certainly insist upon patients seeing me for therapy, I don't just hand out pills. Because first of all, pills alone do not work. And yes, when you first give someone an antidepressant, it can make them activated during at the beginning, or if you're changing medications, yes, which is why you need to be seeing that person every week. And this is not happening. And those are so. And it's not fair to blame the medication. It's not the medication. It's the fact that psychiatrists aren't seeing people sufficiently, which is really due to goes back to insurance. You know, the insurance companies decided that, well, they figured out that it was cheaper to pay a social worker or a psychologist or a marriage and family therapist to do therapy and not psychiatrists. So the only, you can see 8 patients a day, max, pretty much, if you're doing hour-long, 45 minutes to an hour-long of psychotherapy. And that they made it untenable for psychiatrists to do that. So then that's how they resorted to just giving prescriptions, and that doesn't work. And then the person comes back, you know, in a month or 3 months, they don't, not the next week for the most part. They give them an appointment in a month to 3 months. They come back and they're not better. And so what does the psychiatrist do? They just throw more pills, give them another mm-hmm. prescription. And so people end up with like 5 and 6 medications, which, you know, I learned back when I was a chief resident at Bellevue. You know, these are like basic things that's called polypharmacy, and you don't do it. You're not supposed to do it in any case, because first of all, the pills interact with each other. They cancel out each other in a lot of cases. And then also, each one can carry some side effects. So you're really making the person sicker. And this is happening all over America.
And one more question for you. The impact, and it was pandemic, this really supersized, of doing these types of important meetings with a professional like yourself on a Zoom as opposed to in-person counseling. Do you feel that has impacted the healing and mental health situation in America?
Yes. You know, the thing that's most important is the personal relationship that you have, you know, professional, but I mean the connection that you have with your mental health professional. And so it is harder to have as close a connection over Zoom. But that's not as bad as what the worst part of it is. I mean, you can still, it's still possible to have a connection that way. But the worst part of it is that a lot of companies have sprung up to do these telehealth, it's called, and yes. Telemedicine, telehealth, telepsychiatry. And so there's not a good quality control over who the people are who are doing these sessions. It's like mass produced, you know,
yeah.
And whether you're doing it on by telephone or by Zoom, the quality of the mental health professional is questionable in a lot of cases. And if you haven't met them before, you're not really able to develop that closeness. So yes, that is a part. I mean, on the positive side, it does bring treatment to a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't be able to get it. So there is that positive part. But the fact that some companies have come up, you know, to make money and just employ a whole bunch of therapists and really don't have not only quality control for who the therapist is, but like supervision, you know, of what they're doing.
Well, Dr. Carol Lieberman, America's psychiatrist, thank you so much for checking in with us again today. Thanks, Dr. Carol.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate you.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.